If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Strange lights in the desert. My name doesn't matter. My town's name doesn't matter either. It's one of those dusty, forgotten places at the edge of a desert that you would only end up if you were born here or your car broke down on the way to somewhere better. I was born here. I'm a mechanic. I like the predictable logic of it. A car comes in broken, I diagnose the problem, I apply the solution, and it leaves fixed. Cause and effect. Clean, simple, and honest. My life is built on that same principle. I have a routine. I like it. It keeps the chaos of the world at bay. At least, it used to. The chaos started about 3 months ago. It began quietly, without any fanfare. One night, they just appeared. 6 perfect, silent spears of soft white light hovering high in the night sky above the desert flats. They didn't move. They didn't blink. They didn't make a sound. They just hung there, a perfect geometric arrangement against the brilliant, star-dusted canvas of the desert sky. At first, everyone in town was out on their porches, just staring up, a collective, silent awe settling over us. It was beautiful in a strange, unnerving way. The second night, they were back. Same place, same formation. And the third, and every single night since, without fail. After the first week, the novelty wore off for us locals. They became just another part of the landscape, like the mesas or the coyotes. But the outside world took notice. The internet started buzzing. First came the ufologists, with their fancy cameras and their intense, wild-eyed theories. Then came the tourists, the New Age crystal crowd, the Instagram influencers looking for a weird backdrop. Our quiet, forgotten little town was suddenly a destination. And it was a nightmare. These people were a plague. They'd block the roads with their RVs to get a better view. They'd wander onto private property. They'd come into my shop, not for repairs, but to ask me a million stupid questions. Have you been abducted? Do you feel any strange energies? Can you point me to the best place to make contact? It was a constant, infuriating disruption to my routine, to the clean, simple logic of my life. Then, about 2 weeks ago, one of them disappeared. He was a typical seeker. A guy in his 30s drove a beat-up van covered in bumper stickers. He had been in town for a month, spending every night out in the desert, trying to communicate with the lights. One morning, his van was found abandoned at the edge of the flats, his equipment still set up, but he was gone. No note, no sign of a struggle. He had just vanished. That's when all hell broke loose. The county sheriff, the state police, news vans from the city, they all descended on us. The town was crawling with them. The search parties were a joke. Dozens of people who didn't know the first thing about the desert, trampling over everything, yelling, shining their lights. The chaos was a constant grinding noise that was shredding my last nerve. My business was suffering. I couldn't work with the constant interruptions, the blocked roads, the general atmosphere of the Third Ring Circus. I decided I had had enough. The police weren't finding anything. The volunteers were useless. I'm a mechanic. I solve problems. And this circus was a problem. I figured if I wanted it to end, I had to find a solution myself. I know this desert. I know its rhythms, its silences. I thought maybe if I got there alone, away from all the noise, I'll see something that they missed. A simple rational explanation. Maybe the guy just got lost, fell into a ravine. Find the body, the circus leaves, and my life goes back to normal. So last night, I closed up shop, filled a cooler with water, grabbed the most powerful flashlight I own, and headed out to my truck. The official search was focused on a 10-mile radius around the guy's abandoned van. I went in the opposite direction, deeper into the flats, directly towards the lights. The desert at night is a different world. The silence is so absolute, it feels like a pressure on your eardrums. I drove for an hour, the six lights my only guide, a silent celestial chandelier hanging in the infinite darkness. It seemed to hum with a quiet energy, a feeling that vibrated right in my teeth. I was on an old, forgotten service road when I saw it. One of the six lights, the one on the far right of the formation, seemed to detach. It didn't fall like a meteor, burning a bright, fast streak across the sky. It descended. A slow, controlled, silent glide downwards, as if it was being gently lowered on an invisible string. It dropped below the horizon, disappearing behind a low, flat-topped mesa about a mile ahead. My heart started pounding. This was it. This was something. A deviation from the routine. I stomped on the gas, my truck kicking up a cloud of dust as I sped towards the mesa. This was the answer. A downed weather balloon, some experimental drone, a logical physical object that I could find and present to the world. A solution. I parked my truck at the base of the mesa and got out, the powerful beam of my flashlight cutting a sharp, white tunnel through the darkness. The air was cold, and the silence was deeper here, more expectant. I scrambled up the loose rock at the mesa. On the other side was a small, shallow basin, and in the center of it, shimmering in the moonlight, was a pond. That was weird. There are no natural ponds out here. I walked closer. The air grew thick with a foul chemical stench. I realized what it was. An old abandoned mine that had used this basin as a drainage pond decades ago. It was a pit of stagnant, polluted water. I swept my flashlight beam across the area. There was no orb, no wreckage, no strange lights. Nothing. Just the filthy, still water and the smell of industrial waste. A bitter wave of disappointment washed over me. Had I imagined it? Was I so desperate for this to be over that my mind was playing tricks on me? I walked to the edge of the pond, my boots sinking slightly in the damp, contaminated soil. I shone my light onto the surface of the water, hoping to see something submerged. The water was a thick, black, oily soup. It was so murky, so polluted, that the surface was barely reflective. But I could just make out my own silhouette, a dark shape casted by the powerful flashlight in my hand. I stood there for a long moment, ready to give up and go home. And then I noticed it. In the faint, distorted reflection of the water's surface, my silhouette wasn't alone. There was another one, right next to mine. It was the shape of a man, and it was under the surface. And it was moving. It was thrashing frantically, its limbs flailing in the silent, desperate panic. I watched, frozen in a state of pure, uncomprehending horror, as the silhouette beat its fists against the underside of the water's surface. It was like watching a man trapped behind a one-way mirror, a pane of glass separating his world from mine. He was pounding on the wall between us, screaming for help that I couldn't hear. My first thought was the missing man. Was it him? Trapped somehow? Was this some kind of bizarre projection? My mind, the mechanic's mind, was scrambling for a logical explanation and coming up with nothing but static. The sheer, naked terror of the thrashing silhouette was paralyzing. I felt a morbid, terrible urge to get closer, to understand what I was seeing. I knelt down at the water's edge, my flashlight beam still fixed on the two silhouettes. I leaned forward, my face just a few feet from the foul-smelling water. And as I did, my view of the reflection widened. I could now see the reflection of the night sky in the dark, oily water. I saw the stars, and I saw the lights. I counted them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. A jolt of pure electric ice shot through my veins. I ripped my gaze from the reflection and looked up to the real sky. I counted again, my heart hammering against my ribs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There were only 5 lights in the sky, but there were 6 in the reflection. I don't know what came over me. It wasn't courage. It was a kind of horrified, fatalistic curiosity. I had to know if it was real. I had to know if the surface was solid. I reached out a trembling hand, my fingers extended, and I touched the water. The second my fingertips broke the surface, the world ended. A force. An immense, impossibly strong, impossibly cold something wrapped around my wrist from inside the reflection. It was a vice grip of pure, malevolent energy, and it pulled. I screamed a raw, terrified sound that was swallowed by the vast desert silence. The pull was incredible. I was being dragged forward, off my knees, my face towards the filthy water. My mind flashed with an image of the thrashing silhouette, of being pulled through that dark, oily surface into whatever hellish, watery prison laid on the other side. Panic gave me a strength I didn't know I had. I dug my heels into the dirt, threw my entire body weight backward, and roared with effort and terror. For a horrifying second, there was a terrible, stretching, tearing sensation in my arm, as if I was being pulled apart. And then, I was free. I flew backwards, landing hard on the rocky ground, scrambling away from the water's edge like a terrified crab. I laid there gasping, clutching my wrist, which was numb and aching with a profound, bone-deep cold. And then the pond began to glow. A soft white light emanated from beneath the surface, growing brighter and brighter until the entire filthy pond was a blazing, incandescent orb. The light was silent, but it felt loud, pressing on me, scoring the landscape clean of all shadows. The surface of the water began to boil, but with a cold, silent energy. And then, a perfect massive sphere of pure white light erupted from the water. It rose into the air, as silent, as graceful as it had descended. It climbed higher and higher, a new star in the night sky, until it took its place in the formation, back in the empty spot at the far right. There were six again. I didn't wait. I scrambled back to my truck, my mind a blank slate of pure animal fear. I drove, and I didn't look back. I'm home now. I'm safe. But I'm not. The horror isn't out there in the desert anymore. It's here. It's in my house. Because I understand now. They hide in reflections. Any reflection. I haven't been able to look in a mirror. I spent all of yesterday with a towel covering my bathroom mirror. I can't look at my own TV when it's turned off. The dark, reflective screen feels like a deep, black pond, and I'm terrified of what I might see looking back at me from just beyond the surface. A puddle on the street. A shop window. The reflection in a pair of sunglasses. They're all doorways. They're all potential prisons. The man who disappeared, he's not dead. He's not lost. He's taken. He's in there, in that watery reflection, thrashing against the other side. And maybe one day, the thing that took him will get bored and let another one out. I live in a world without mirrors now. A world where I have to be careful of every shiny surface. I almost got pulled in. I almost became another silent, screaming silhouette trapped behind the glass. And I could still feel the cold in my wrist where it touched me. A constant, chilling reminder that the world I thought was so logical, so full of cause and effect, has a dark, predatory reflection. And it is always, always waiting for you to get too close.